Week 2 kicks off tonight. Welcome back, everybody. This is For the Numbers, presented by FTNFantasy.com. My name is Adam, here on Thursday, September the 12th, 2024. We have an awesome game to kick off Week 2 of the NFL season. My Buffalo Bills at the Miami Dolphins should be a good one. We'll break down that game as well as the rest of the games here for Week 2. This is the game-by-game preview episode of the podcast, and it's always a long one. So grab a beverage, relax, and get ready to help set your fantasy lineups. And this podcast is great because it can apply for season-long leagues. It can apply to DFS, and it's my favorite podcast of the week. I have a ton of awesome notes to help you go in-depth with all these matchups. Of course, the podcast, once again, brought to you by Circa. With the return of the NFL season, so has the return of the largest pro football contest in Vegas with Circa Survivor and Circa Millions. NFL is crazy, right? We saw just this past week the Falcons lose at home to the Steelers. The Patriots upset the Bengals. So even in that Circa Millions contest, you got to pick five correct picks against the spread each week. And it sounds easy, but it is not, as you can clearly see with how crazy the NFL season can be. To enter in Nevada, or you can enter anywhere, visit circasports.com for the details. And let's start off with these games. Thursday Night Football here tonight. Buffalo at Miami. Excited for this game. We do have injury notes for this game. Raheem Mostert's been ruled out with a chest issue, and Devon Achane with an ankle is questionable. Limited on Wednesday in practice. I expect him to play. Very possible that when you're listening to this, he's already been active or ruled active. Maybe there's some limitations with him. Maybe not 100%. You know he's not going to get this massive workload, whether he's 70% healthy or 100% healthy. So I do anticipate we see Jalen Wright active for the first time this year. And I do expect probably Jeff Wilson slides into the Raheem Mostert role. And then for the Bills side, no Taron Johnson. Their best defensive back, probably their second or third best defensive player. So that's going to be a loss for them, especially after already being without Matt Milano. Let's start with the Dolphins since they're the easy team. You're starting Tua. Maybe. He's actually not been consistently a top 12 quarterback in fantasy against the Bills, but he's still on that like QB1, QB2 borderline for me. You're definitely starting Tyreek Hill, obviously. Jalen Waddle is a top 20 wide receiver. The Bills' defense does struggle with speed. But at the same time, they've actually defended the Dolphins pretty well with in terms of like limiting the deep explosive plays to Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Last year, Tyreek Hill really didn't do much against the Bills. Now, obviously, they're still starting. He scored in that Week 18 game, but there wasn't a lot of deep stuff because the Bills, over the past couple of seasons, have been probably the best team in the NFL at limiting explosive pass plays and explosive touchdowns. So, but yeah, you're still starting Tyreek. Jalen Waddle's a top 20 wide receiver. But Devon Achane, like if he plays, you're starting him, obviously. But this is a scary spot for the Bills. Because there's two things the Bills really struggle with on defense. And that's speed, like I mentioned, and defending screens. They were bad at it last season. They were bad at it again week one against the Cardinals. And you look at how Devon Achane was utilized last week with all the receivers that have been out. You know, there's no depth for the Dolphins at wide receiver. Odell Beckham out, Malik Washington out. So we pretty much saw Devon Achane operate as the third wide receiver. 7 catches, 70 yards. He lined up out wide or in the slot on 14 snaps. And he had, I think, 5 snaps in five targets out of pre-snap motion, 4 screen targets. Like, and now you have the fact that the Bills, without Matt Milano, without Taron Johnson, I don't see how they slow him down. And he's killed them the past two games he's played. Now I think he plays. I'm slightly concerned that there's some limitations on a short week, but especially with Mostert out and the fact that he got a goal line touchdown last week. Yeah, you're starting Devon Achane if he plays. If he doesn't play, if he gets ruled out, Jeff Wilson becomes probably a top 26-ish running back for me. He was utilized last week with, you know, Mostert and Achane. They're both kind of in and out of the game at times, but Jeff Wilson would probably get 15 to 18 opportunities. And then Jalen Wright would be like a desperation flex play if that happens. But I do expect him to be, you know, active for the first time this year. For the Buffalo Bills, starting Josh Allen, I would probably. I don't know. Some people think he's overrated, though, so maybe you don't want to start him. I don't know. All jokes aside, Josh Allen, he's amazing. And the last nine matchups against Miami, he's averaging 28 fantasy points per game. We know the track record he has against the Dolphins. Just destroys them. Different scheme defensively this year. In the past, it's been a lot of cover zero and a lot of blitzing. And that's allowed Josh Allen, if he escapes that initial pass rush, he just runs for a ton of yards. But yeah, you're starting Josh Allen. You're starting James Cook. Didn't get the touchdown, but had a couple goal-to-go opportunities. Handled 22 of the 28 running back touches in week one. Over 100 scrimmage yards. And if you go back to Joe Brady, when Joe Brady took over in week 11 of last season, since then, James Cook's averaging 19.8 touches per game. So just massive workload. I do think he's going to have some games where he scores. So you obviously have to start him. And I talked about this on the recap episode. I am like 0% worried about Dalton Kincaid. Yes, the Bills scored 34 points and Kincaid had one catch for 11 yards. It's frustrating. But if you go back and watch that game, first of all, he played a career-high 50 snaps. He played like 85% of the snaps. He ran a route on 84% of dropbacks. And like there was multiple plays schemed and designed for Dalton Kincaid. You just have to give the Cardinals credit because they took it away. There was one where he lined up in the backfield on the play where Josh Allen scored the insane rushing touchdown, where the play was designed for him to leak out of the backfield and hide behind the offensive line to the flat. Cardinals saw it, covered it. Second play where he was in motion to the bunch formation on the right side was supposed to be a quick kind of in route to him. Safety came down, bracket coverage. And there was one play where he was literally covered by four Cardinals. So I don't think teams are going to be like, hey, listen, Dalton Kincaid, somebody you have to double team all year. I think that was an approach the Cardinals had because there was uncertainty with Keon Coleman and Curtis Samuel's offense. But Keon Coleman made plays. Khalil Shakir made plays. I don't think the Dolphins will be able to double cover Dalton Kincaid. If he bounced back with like six catches on eight targets for 60 yards and a touchdown, I don't think anybody should be surprised. And again, he had the usage in terms of the routes and the snaps that you want. Those three are the only players you have to start for Buffalo. Then it gets to some flex players like Keon Coleman and Khalil Shakir. I was really surprised how involved Coleman was right out of the gate. I thought he would potentially be eased in a little bit, but that was not the case. He led the Bills in snaps, routes, and targets. Looked really good. It's a tough spot for him against Jalen Ramsey, but there's injuries we're dealing with all of a sudden, right? So he would be a flex play. And Shakir as well. The three wide sets were Mac Hollins, Keon Coleman, and Khalil Shakir. I don't think Hollins is going anywhere. Curtis Samuel played like 17 snaps or something like that. Just 27% of the total snaps. I actually don't think it was because he was dealing with the turf toe. One of the Bills beat reporters asked Sean McDermott about this after the game, and he said it was more of just kind of the way the game went. He didn't say it was anything to do with him being limited. So I think right now you have to view the top three Bills receivers as Shakir, Coleman, and Matt Collins. And the matchup for Shakir is really good. He's going to see the best individual matchup against Kader Kohu, who last year allowed 2.2 fantasy points per target and 9 touchdowns in coverage. So it's a really good spot for Shakir. I actually like him a lot as for playing showdown. If you're really desperate for a flex, I like Khalil Shakir quite a bit. All right, moving on to the next game, Las Vegas at Baltimore. Ravens like 9-point home favorites here. I'm starting pretty much all of the Ravens, right? Like you're obviously starting Lamar. Derrick Henry, I understand some people are concerned, but he scored. He got the goal line work. And it was a weird game where there was a lot of two-minute drills for the Ravens, and they had a lot of like second and third and longs due to penalties, and the offensive line wasn't ready. Now they're back at home as huge favorites, which is when you want to start Derrick Henry in fantasy. By the way, the Raiders just allowed 135 yards and a touchdown to J.K. Dobbins last week. Last year, they allowed a 12.6% explosive rush rate on inside zone runs. That was the fifth worst in the NFL. And that was a lot of what the Ravens did with Henry in week one. So starting him, I'm starting Zay Flowers. He's a top 25 wide receiver for me. It was once again a lot of those schemed low upside targets for Zay Flowers in week one. 4 screen targets, 5 behind line of scrimmage, but he had 10 total targets. The Raiders, for what it's worth, though, last year, third most receiving yards allowed off screens and almost 10 yards after the catch per reception. And looking at Zay Flowers' cover 3 stats last year, according to the Stats Hub, he was top 10 in receptions, he had a 24% target share, and he was top 8 with a 66.7% open separation rate against cover 3, which the Raiders run quite a bit. So I like Zay Flowers here. And then I'm starting both tight ends. Like, this team used 2 tight end sets over 50% of the time in week one. And we have to stop almost viewing Isaiah Likely. Yes, you play him at the tight end spot in fantasy, but he's a wide receiver for them. So, and I do think Andrews bounces back. Similar to Kincaid, he saw a lot of bracket coverage too, which opened things up for Likely. We also have to wonder how healthy Mark Andrews really was. So I'm starting all of the Ravens. I really am. And I'm not worried about how, I fully anticipate by the end of week two, us saying, well, the buy low window on Derrick Henry and Mark Andrews is completely shut. That's what I anticipate happening. For the Raiders side, there's really not much here. Like, Devontae Adams, is tough to bench him due to the volume, but the ceiling is just not massive, especially in this spot. But he'll be a top 15 wide receiver for most people in the rankings. And then Brock Bowers had really good usage in his first game. So, especially with what's happening in the tight end position, a lot of disappointment to week one. Now you have no Jake Ferguson, potentially. You definitely don't have David Njoku for a few weeks. So Brock Bowers is probably just based off the position, too. You know, regardless of the matchup, a borderline must-start tight end. And it's over for Zamir White. Especially in a game where they're 9-point dogs. Last week, he played just over 50% of the snaps. Or he played 39% of the snaps. Madison played over 50%. And Madison played on 100% of the third downs. And they both kind of were worked in on first downs. So, yeah, do I project Zamir White to lead this team in carries? Sure. But that doesn't mean anything. Especially if they're down, you know, 17-3 early. So Zamir White is not only somebody that I'm not starting, it's somebody that I'm not dropping, but I'm just not even like, I'm not. How many games are we going to expect the Raiders to be? Because like even last week, they lost 22-10, but they weren't obviously ever down by like 17 points. So just a brutal spot for Zamir White, and I'm freaking out about him if I drafted him. Cleveland at Jacksonville up next. Let's start with the Cleveland side of things. Solid workload for Jerome Ford. He played 73% of the snaps. He handled 18 of the 22 running back touches. He's every time he's kind of gotten a start for Cleveland, he's been really active in the passing game. I think he had 6 catches last week. Wasn't overly efficient, but Jacksonville was a team that allowed a ton of receptions to running backs last year. And then, of course, last week, Devon Achane has 7 catches against him. So could be, once again, a 4-5-6 catch game from Jerome Ford. He's a top 24 running back. And probably most weeks, he's right around there until Chubb comes back. I think it's an interesting spot for Amari Cooper, too, because with the new scheme for Jacksonville's defense, they went really man-heavy last week. They played man 67.5% of the time, according to the Advanced Stats Hub. That was the second highest rate among all teams. And they were top 5 in dropbacks in cover 1 with 18 of them. So it's a similar spot that Amari Cooper was in last week, like Dallas. Cooper last year was 15th in yards per out run against cover 1 with a 24.7% target share. And like he just like, you want to look at like the buy low air yardage models, like he's the cover man. Like 170 air yards last week led the NFL. But he had a 6.5% catchable air yard rate. Like, that's just like, and he should have had like a 40-yard touchdown. It was a little bit overthrown. It was one of those tough plays where maybe he could have caught it, but it definitely wasn't a perfect throw. But I like Cooper. He's still getting a lot of the work. He had 9 total targets. Again, all those air yards. Like, I like the spot for him to win against these Jacksonville defensive backs in man coverage. And then tight end, like, Jordan Akins is kind of interesting in deep leagues if you're desperate at tight end. I know Cleveland's working out some tight ends right now, but he's got familiarity with Deshaun Watson. He was the clear lead tight end when Njoku left the game. And this Kevin Stefanski offense is always pretty tight end friendly. So I think you could do a lot worse than Jordan Akins. On the Jacksonville side, I'm interested to see what this running back usage looks like. If Etienne either starts off slow or if they just immediately, give some work to Tank Bigsby, who definitely looked better last week. Etienne had that fumble, which could have been a second touchdown for him. They have been wanting Tank Bigsby to become something. I also hesitate to just say, oh, after 1 week, this is a 50-50 split. But we do know, they wanted to ease Etienne's workload. They did it down the stretch of last season. So maybe this is closer to, a 60-40 split than we anticipated. And if that's the case, Etienne's probably going to be one of the largest disappointments in fantasy. But I'm not completely off of him going into this game. It's a tough matchup, but I don't know how you have the running back depth. Obviously, if you picked up Jordan Mason, you're starting Jordan Mason if he starts over Travis Etienne, because you're probably starting Jordan Mason over all but four or five running backs at this point. But I'd be hard pressed to bench him for in the same game. Would you bench him for Jerome Ford? I don't know if I'd go there yet, but if you're worried about Tank Bigsby, Jerome Ford's probably getting 15, 18 touches. So it's interesting. Trevor Lawrence is a mid-range quarterback too here. Wasn't good again in fantasy. Had one of the best throws you'll see all year on the Brian Thomas touchdown, but not the spot I love. And speaking of Brian Thomas, I said all offseason he is going to lead this team in end zone targets. He had two in this game. The first one I don't think actually counts because it was a penalty, because he would have scored, but Ramsey kind of tackled him in the end zone. But I counted as an end zone target. And of course he had the touchdown. He looked really good. I don't think it's an overreaction to say he's going to be the wide receiver one for this team if he's not already. Tough matchup against Denzel Ward, but he's a wide receiver three flex play. Christian Kirk, also a wide receiver three in PPR formats. I don't anticipate him or Evan Engram being that bad. So Engram still a must-start tight end. Kirk and Brian Thomas, both wide receiver three plays. Moving along to the Jets at the Titans. The Jets, we got that one drive where Rodgers was just throwing to Garrett Wilson and throwing to Breece Hall, and it was fun. And I think Wilson had 4-46 on that drive. Breece Hall scores, and then the Jets offense didn't do anything the rest of the game. Granted, they couldn't get back on the field because the Jets run defense couldn't get off the field. The Jets had the ball for 21 minutes in week one. Only the Colts were on the field less. So I think that played a part in it, but how do you not love what you saw from Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson? I mean, Breece Hall played 82% of the snaps, but he played all but one with Aaron Rodgers. He had 55.3% of the total touches in the Jets. That's not just running back touches, but the entire team. And then Garrett Wilson had a 47.6% target share from Rodgers. Maybe it'll hurt them sometimes of just being so one-dimensional with these two players, but yeah, Garrett Wilson, Rodgers looked good enough to me. Obviously, that it wasn't perfect, but he looked good enough to me that I think Garrett Wilson has top five upside this year. Titans, I think their defense will be improved like we saw. As expected with the moves they made this offseason, they played a lot more man coverage this season. They were top five in man coverage rate last week. Jarius Sneed probably going to see some Garrett Wilson, but they moved Garrett Wilson around the formation quite a bit. So Wilson's still a top 10 receiver for me. I think I'm as wide receiver 8 at the moment. And then for the Titans, Tony Pollard handled 19 touches to Tajay Spears' 8. Spears, of course, played 92% of the third downs. The Titans didn't have any snaps last week inside the 10-yard line, so we didn't get to see who would get that short yardage usage. My guess is it would be Tony Pollard. After the game, though, Brian Callahan said that he wants to see the running back usage a lot tighter. So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw 15 touches for Pollard and 10 or 11 for Spears. Interesting spot, though. The Jets last week just got gashed on the ground. Jordan Mason, we know what he did, but the advanced analytics, 6 explosive runs allowed. They missed 15 tackles as a team. Just 13% of the runs were stuffed at or behind line of scrimmage. So I think Pollard's still the preferred play, but he's a flex play for me. And the wide receiver is Will Levis looked terrible. And now you have the Jets secondary with Sauce. DJ Reed didn't play well last week, but he's better than what he showed. I don't really want to start a Titans pass catcher. The Jets will be pissed off after a bad defensive performance. The secondary is still great. Hopkins, you can't start. I know there was a report that he's going to be closer to full snaps, but I can't trust that. He's playing on a torn MCL. Like, I have no interest in starting any Titans wide receivers. And I honestly don't have a ton of interest starting any Titans, just because what if we do see a closer split between the running backs? But if I had to choose one player on the Titans to start, it would be Tony Pollard, but I'm clearly not incredibly excited about it. Saints at Dallas. I kind of like this game. I think this game could go two ways. I think it could be like 17-10. Three ways. I think it'd be like a close defensive battle because the Saints defense is good and Dallas defense looks legit again. I think Dallas could just prove that the Saints, cool, you beat the Panthers, but you're not still not that good, and they could win this game like 27-10. Or it could be sneaky high scoring with this new Saints offense. Like, finally, thank you, Clint Kubiak. More motion, more play action. Last week, Derek Carr used play action on 40% of his dropbacks. In 2023, that was at 14.8%. It was one of the lowest marks in the NFL. And then, of course, last year, the Saints, 31st in pre-snap motion rate at 29.3%. They climbed all the way up to around 80% in week one. Now, that's not sustainable, but clearly that shows that they are going to go from bottom five of the league in pre-snap motion to, at worst, top 10, and probably top five. And it helped Rashid Shaheed, and it helped the tight ends, and helped everybody but Chris Olave, who had two catches for 11 yards. Just like Dalton Kincaid, I am 0% worried about Olave. Like, that game was over by the end of the first quarter. So, this game, the game script's going to be a lot different. Not the easiest matchup with Dallas' defensive backs, but Dallas' scheme is the same. Last year, they had the most dropbacks in cover one. Last week, they played a league-high 20 dropbacks in cover one. Chris Olave against cover one last season, 24% target share, top 10 in yards per out run at 3.0, and he averaged 3.5 air yards per out run with four touchdowns against the coverage, and six of his 11 total end zone targets came against cover one. So, I'm still starting Chris Olave with all the confidence in the world. And that, you know, when you're playing cover one, it's going to lead you and make you susceptible to some deep explosive pass plays, which makes Rashid Shaheed still a boom bust flex play. He played a ton of snaps, and I've always believed in the player. Like, it was a good week for the two players that were pretty hyped in that same range of, you know, Rashid Shaheed and Jameson Williams, who we'll talk about in a little bit. Alvin Kamara, 20 carries in this game. Yeah, Jamal Williams had 11, but eight of them came in the final four drives of a game that the Saints won by 37 points. So this is clearly still Kamara's backfield. And Kamara had three carries at the goal line, tied for the most in week one. So he's a must-start player, obviously. Dallas' run defense, I still have questions up front, inside. So I still think it's a plus matchup for Kamara. Derek Carr played well. I think I have more confidence in Derek Carr with the scheme change, but not enough to start him in a traditional 12 quarterback or 12 team league, one quarterback league against Dallas' defense in Dallas. And speaking of Dallas, Dak, he's back end quarterback one. He played fine. He played good. He just didn't have to do a lot last week. He played good though. CeeDee Lamb, must start player. Saints play a ton of man and cover one, so we have two similar kind of defensive philosophies here. Lamb last season, all he did against cover one was lead the NFL in targets, receptions, and touchdowns with a 33.2% target share. And you have the fact that Marshon Lattimore is a little bit banged up still. He was banged up coming into last week's game, still not quite 100%. So if he were to miss this game, that would only benefit CeeDee Lamb even more. Zeke was the lead running back kind of for Dallas. I still wouldn't love having to start him, but I get it if you're hurting at running back. It looks like it's just going to be a hot hand, and Zeke played better, so you have to give him credit. And finally, we'll have to keep an eye on Jake Ferguson. He thinks he can play still. He did practice on Wednesday. If he plays, I don't see how I have tight ends better than him. Like, if you picked up Likely, yeah, I'd probably start Isaiah Likely over him. But other than that, I probably put him right back in my lineup. But if he sits, Brandon Cooks becomes a lot more interesting. He had seven targets last week. He scored. So we'll keep an eye, though, on the status of Jake Ferguson. We will take a break. When we come back, more game-by-game previews for week two. We'll go talk about J.K. Dobbins. Can he keep this up against the Carolina Panthers in one of the best matchups in all fantasy football? NFC East matchup between Washington and the Giants. Does anybody care? We'll break all of that down and much more here on the podcast. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Let's keep on rolling with the Chargers at the Carolina Panthers. And hopefully you picked up J.K. Dobbins. And hopefully he stays healthy, because a lot of people are talking about, like, yes, if you take away his 40-yard run and his 60-yard run, like, first of all, I hate that game because, like, he did it. He did that. You can't just take it away. Like, I don't understand. I just don't understand that mindset. And then there's, like, yeah, like, he got caught on two of those, both of those long runs. But, like, I don't care. He's healthy. He's clearly better than Gus Edwards. And the Chargers' run scheme looks really good. They were great in yards before contact per attempt last week. Dobbins was over 5 yards before contact per attempt. The Panthers allowed 2.6 yards before contact per attempt last week. We saw what the Saints did to them. Oh, by the way, now Derek Brown, who's their best defensive player, he's out for the season in the middle of that defense. Dobbins, you know, he split work with Gus Edwards, but he played 85% of the third downs. He ran all of the third down routes among running backs. And now after what he did and what Gus Edwards didn't do, there's a chance that usage goes from 10 Dobbins carries and 3 catches to 14 Dobbins carries and 3 catches. And if you're giving J.K. Dobbins, or anybody for that matter, 17 touches against his Panthers defense as a home favorite or as a favorite in general, I hesitate to say Dobbins is a must-start player, but in this particular matchup, he might be close. So if you picked him up off waivers, you're probably starting him. The rest of this team, Ladd McConkey had really nice usage last week. Led the team in targets, receptions. He scored. Josh Palmer got ejected, but that was weird. And Quentin Johnson got a lot of first read targets, which was kind of interesting. Something I'm keeping an eye on, but not starting him. I think Ladd's a fine, you know, mid-range wide receiver 3 flex play. He looked good. Herbert looked good. I like the offensive line. Herbert, still based off volume and upside, is still a QB2, but I mean, if Derek Carr can, you know, carve up this defense for 3 touchdowns, granted his skill position players are much better, I don't see why Justin Herbert can't. So, like, maybe if he's cheap in DFS when everybody's probably going to be on Dobbins, I would imagine. But yeah. Other side of this game, I know it was one game, but I really hope I wasn't fooled, because I was very vocal about my belief and my confidence in this Panthers offense with Dave Canales and Bryce Young. I thought Bryce Young would be one of the most improved players in the NFL this season. And he looked terrible. Chuba Hubbard was splitting stuff with Miles Sanders. Like, the only appeal of Chuba Hubbard was volume, and that might not even be the case. The offense is terrible. I mean, the only person you can consider starting on this team is Deontay Johnson. And even then, it's like a low-ceiling wide receiver 3. Is there a franchise in worse shape than the Panthers right now, given what all they traded and lost by trading for Bryce Young, if Bryce Young is a massive bust? Not ideal. Not ideal at all. All right, we have the Giants at the Commanders up next. And this is a matchup where I wrote, something's got to give. Right? You have one of the worst defenses in the NFL, especially pass defenses, in Washington. And then you have an awful Giants offense. So what are we going to see here? I think you're starting Malik. He's probably going to be like a top 25 wide receiver for me. Okay usage in week 1. Not good enough. Has to be better. But the matchup is just so good, it's ridiculous. After allowing the second most fantasy points per game to wide receivers last season, in week 1 of this season, Washington allows 5 for 61 and 2 to Mike Evans, 8 for 83 and 1 to Chris Godwin, and a 32-yard touchdown to Jalen McMillan. As I pointed out, last year they allowed 103 yards per game to wide receiver ones, the most in the NFL. So it's a good bounce back spot. I think you can also play Wandale Robinson in a pinch in some deep PPR leagues. He had 8 targets in week 1. He had 47.1% of the Giants' first read targets. 2 targets in pre-snap motion. It's just how much do you trust Daniel Jones? It's what it comes down to. But I just think, like, Dan Quinn can be a good defensive-minded head coach. And I said this all offseason. I don't think it matters when the Commanders don't have the personnel on the back end. It's just really bad. But yeah, I think Wandale is like a sneaky flex play this week. I actually like him quite a bit. Like, the upside, don't get me wrong, he's still getting that insanely low ADOT, and he could catch 7 passes for 48 yards in this game. But in a full PPR league, you'll take that. You will take that. Devin Singletary handled majority of the workload. He's a flex play still. Washington's run defense is actually kind of solid. Like, Bucky Irving got a lot of, you know, huge lanes against them. Rashad White did nothing. They did allow a lot of receptions to those two last week, and Singletary is not coming off the field, at least not yet. So he's still a viable volume-based flex play. You also have the fact with Wandale, too, that he's only playing out of the slot still. And we just saw Chris Godwin. He had 83 yards and a touchdown, but 48 yards and 4 of those catches and the touchdown came from the slot in particular. So then you have the pace up spot, too. Like, we knew Washington coming into the season were going to be super fast-paced, and we saw that clearly in week 1. Commanders, 46.4% no-huddle rate. 46%. So it's good for the overall game when they're playing that fast. On the Washington side, we have Jayden Daniels, who had a great fantasy game. He was a top 3 quarterback, I think. He ran the ball 16 times for 86 yards and 2 touchdowns. His 16 carries were the 6th most by a rookie quarterback. And he had 3 goal line carries. 7 of his runs were scrambles. So you love to see that for fantasy. I don't think Washington wants him to be running 16 times. But that's clearly a huge part of his game. This is weird, though, with Jayden Daniels, because he was such a prolific deep ball passer in college. And throughout training camp and practices and training camp, we saw him throwing deep. And then in the preseason games, it was screens, all of this short stuff. And then in week 1, it was the same thing. 29% of his passes were behind line of scrimmage. And the other thing I hated was there was no motion from Washington. None. They were bottom 5 in pre-snap motion in week 1. Daniels had just 4 pass attempts from pre-snap motion. So that was frustrating. But the floor is so high. I mean, Jayden Daniels is probably a top 12 quarterback rest of the way pretty easily. And there's upside for more. Terry McLaurin has a really good track record against the Giants. So it was disappointing last week. But I'm worried a little bit, not mainly because of the scheme. Like, he was not moved around at all. If you remember what DeAndre Hopkins' usage was with Cliff Kingsbury, was stand on the left side of the field and don't move. And that was literally Terry McLaurin. 42 of his 48 snaps, he was on the left side of the field. Didn't move in pre-snap motion at all. I think in this matchup against a Giants secondary that I'm not worried about too much, and just allowed Sam Darnold to complete like 19 of 24 passes and start 12 for 12, I think that's fine. But when you're in tougher matchups, and he's by far and away your best player on offense, you got to move him around more. So I'll still start Terry McLaurin as a wide receiver 3, but if he doesn't do it here, then I'm going to be concerned. And finally, the backfield. Brian Robinson handled most of the work. Eckler played on third downs, salvaged his day with like 4 for 52 in the passing game. I thought Eckler looked good. I thought he looked explosive. He made one play where he broke 2 tackles after a catch. I thought Eckler looked good. And if they keep throwing the ball so short, he'll have some weeks in PPR formats. But Brian Robinson, clearly running back to start here. He was still involved in the passing game. Got the goal line work, although he will lose and did lose work to Jalen Daniels in the goal line. But much better spot. Commanders won't be trailing. And if they are trailing, it's not going to be by enough to where Brian Robinson fades out of the game. So I think he's a strong running back 2 against the Giants. Tampa Bay at Detroit up next. This game could be fun. Apparently, the Lions are just playing rematches of the playoff games. First it was the Rams, then it was the now it's the Bucks, and I guess after that it'll be San Fran. I expect Jared Goff to be better this week. I thought he was terrible in week one. I really did. I thought he was late on a lot of his throws. I thought his footwork was bad. He didn't play well. But I'm still giving him the benefit of the doubt here because he's at home, where since 2022 he's averaging 274 passing yards and over 20 fantasy points per game. And now you have Tampa Bay, who is missing multiple players in the secondary. And we know they're going to blitz. Todd Bowles blitzed at the third highest rate in the NFL in week one at 42.5%. And Jared Goff was pretty solid against the blitz last year. Completed 64.6% of his passes, 13 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Speaking of the blitz, Amon-Ra St. Brown, just one of the many disappointing stat lines of week one. He should bounce back here. He had a 28.8% target share against the blitz last season, league high 4 targets per game against the blitz, and he was 7th in yards per out run against the blitz. And again, these corners are really banged up for the Bucs. So, yeah, obviously you're still starting Amon-Ra. You're starting Sam Laporta. And J-Mo. J-Mo was fun in week one. Used a bunch of different ways. He had 2 targets on go routes, which one of them was his touchdown. 2 targets on drag routes. So they wanted to get him the ball in space. That was clearly a point of emphasis for the Lions. And he looked good. And he saw a lot of first read targets in that game. Now, do I think he's suddenly the top option over Amon-Ra? No. But this element of the offense they didn't have last year. So he's in that wide receiver 3 range for me too. And then you're starting both running backs. In week one, Jahmyr Gibbs played 51% of the snaps, had 11 carries and 4 catches. Montgomery played 49% of the snaps, 17 carries, and Gibbs had two goal line carries to Montgomery's 1. So it was about as 50-50 of a split as possible. It is worth noting that Gibbs was, you know, he was a little bit hurt in the preseason. I expected to get closer to like 55-45 in favor of Gibbs probably, but you're starting both running backs, especially Gibbs too, because we just saw Tampa Bay last week. They allowed 7 catches for over 100 yards to the Washington running backs. For Tampa Bay, if you streamed Baker last week because you don't love your quarterback situation or Jordan Love now is hurt and you picked him up, I think you can go right back to him. The Lions are going to be a massive pass funnel. Like, this run defense is really tough. We saw a stretch in the first quarter last week where the Rams went like their first 11 plays, they passed the ball 10 times. And we haven't had a running back even reach 70 rushing yards against the Lions over the last 18 games dating back to last season. And we know Rashad White is not efficient. So I'm starting Rashad White still because of the volume, especially in the passing game, but it's going to have to come from the passing game most likely in the spot for him to be good. So I have him low in my rankings, and I wouldn't, you know, expect a huge game, but it's hard to bench a running back that can get 16, 17 touches and 5 catches. The Lions also a team that's not only struggled against wide receiver ones in the past, but also slot receivers. So hello, Mike Evans. Hello, Chris Godwin. The interesting thing with Chris Godwin, though, is after all this talk with Liam Cohen about, yeah, we're moving Godwin back into a full-time slot role, he actually only played in the slot 40% of the time in week one, or 44%. That was a 37% in 2023. So it really wasn't this massive jump in usage, but with the Bucs running 3 wide sets over 80% of the time, you know, McMillan's a guy that can play in the slot, but yeah, Godwin looked good, and it's a good matchup for him. So other than that, yeah, Buggy Irving, not somebody I would start, but somebody I would definitely pick up, especially if I have Rashad White in my team. Very possibly he starts to take some carries away. Colts at Green Bay up next. This game is pretty easy. The only Green Bay players I'd start if Jordan Love is not starting are Josh Jacobs and Jaden Reed. Just because Jaden Reed can still get a lot of those schemed jet sweep, touch passes, easy targets in the passing game. The Colts just got gashed by Joe Mixon last week. So, and Jacobs' volume isn't going anywhere. For the Colts, Anthony Richardson continues to show his fantasy point per dropback upside. Michael Pittman still dominated the targets. He had like 37% of the targets, something like that, maybe even higher. And then Jonathan Taylor, just he didn't catch any passes, which sucked, and he wasn't overly efficient, but he played like over 90% of snaps and had over 90% of the running back touches, so he is not coming off the field. Yeah, that game's really simple, actually. Move on to San Fran at Minnesota. Jordan Mason. Looks like McCaffrey could sit out. He's been limited. He said he expects to play, I think. He's kind of always in that mindset, but there was reports earlier in the week that it would be a long shot from the playing week two. It's pretty simple. If he doesn't play, Jordan Mason's a top 10 running back. He looked awesome. Didn't matter that 50% of his carries he saw a stacked box. It just didn't matter. Didn't come off the field. 28 carries. He's getting 20 touches in this game. You're starting him. Brock Purdy is on that QB1, QB2 borderline for me. And Debo's a must-start. He had 8 carries last week without McCaffrey. Like, he had 8 carries in a game where Jordan Mason still had 28. Like, I don't think we're going to have these sustained long drives to the level that we saw last week. That was a huge part of it. But, yeah, Debo's obviously, his floor is even higher without McCaffrey, potentially. Brandon Ayuk was limited 60% of the snaps, dropped a touchdown. He definitely looked rusty. So I expect him to bounce back here. And the Vikings more of a, they play a lot of zone, but they blitz a lot. So it's an interesting spot. Always kind of look at, you know, teams man zone splits when looking at Ayuk and Debo. But with Debo's usage without McCaffrey, I think it's just, even if it was a man heavy team, you'd be starting Debo with confidence. And then George Kittle, you're not benching him. I know these are some of the games you'll see from Kittle where he's blocking a ton, especially when they're averaging, you know, they're getting 5 yards every time they run the football. Why get away from that? For the Vikings, Jefferson must start, especially if Addison's out. He's going to get a 35% target share probably. It's Jefferson and Aaron Jones. It's just that simple. You don't love the matchup, but the volume should be great. Like, where else are they going to throw the football? So, I think this is the final 1 o'clock game. Yeah, Seahawks, Patriots. It's a pretty tough spot again for DK Metcalf. Last week, he ran into Patrick Surtain, who shadowed him on 96% of routes, according to FTN's shadow matrix. Now he's got to face Christian Gonzalez, who shadowed Jamar Chase on 86% of his routes last week. And Christian Gonzalez is good. Really, really good. So I'm once again tempering expectations for Metcalf, especially because despite the hype and appeal with Ryan Grubb coming in to lead this offense, Seattle last week was like towards the top of the NFL in neutral script rush rate. They were not aggressive. They played slow. So Metcalf's a low-end wide receiver 2 for me. Lockett and JSN, both wide receiver 3 range. If you think Metcalf struggles again with Christian Gonzalez, then that could be a bump for those secondary wide receivers. And Lockett, look, we always count him out, but he looked good again last week. We do have to keep an eye on the backfield, though. Ken Walker with the abdomen didn't practice on Wednesday. After the game, he said he was good, but there's a chance he doesn't play in this game, which means Zach Charbonnet would become like a top 22 running back. Last year, his like per game stuff wasn't great when he started, but he got like 18 to 20 touches per game. And then you have Denver's run defense, or sorry, the Patriots run defense, which is good, but the usage just be tough to bench. So we'll keep an eye on that, obviously, throughout the rest of the week. For the Patriots, it's Ramondre Stevenson. That's it. He dominated the snaps and workload. 25 carries, played on third downs, looked pretty good in the outside zone scheme. It's just, there's nobody else you're starting. Like, you're not starting, you know, KJ Osborne was like operating as a wide receiver 1. DeMario Douglas, Jalen Polk, like, you're just not starting any Patriots pass catcher, really. So it's Ramondre Stevenson, and that's it from the Patriots. All right, let's keep moving to the 4 o'clock games. Bengals at Chiefs. This is such a good spot for the Chiefs. We'll start with the Bengals real quick. We'll keep an eye on T. Higgins. with the hamstring. Didn't practice on Wednesday. Ja'Marr Chase, there was obviously a lot of discussion about whether he was going to play last week. He ended up playing. There was pretty much a guarantee that he was going to be limited, but he wasn't really that limited. He played 83% of the snaps. He ran a route on 87.5% of dropbacks. There was nothing downfield for the Bengals, though. Like, Joe Burrow played bad. But obviously, you're starting Chase. I don't think Joe Burrow's a must-start quarterback here, especially with T out, or if T's out. I don't know if the wrist is 100% again. Like, I think there was some, shots of it bothering him on the sideline. We know what the Chiefs defense is capable of. Like, I would start Tua over Burrow. I would start probably Brock Purdy over Burrow. And Baker's pretty close. I would definitely start Goff over Burrow. The obvious guys, you know that. I'm trying to find, Jaden Daniels, I think I would start over Burrow. So definitely not a must-start quarterback for me. And then the backfield, it's Zach Moss, at least as of right now. In week one, he played 65% of snaps, played over 70% of the third downs, and all of the snaps at the goal line and in the two-minute drill. Out-touched Chase Brown 11-6. Only 11 touches, but a lot of three and outs start that game for the Bengals. Offense couldn't really get anything going. But, even against the Chiefs, their offense has to be better than it was last week. So Zach Moss, high-end running back 3, flex play. And Chase Brown, we kind of have to wait and see. All right, let's talk about the Chiefs because I love everything about the spot for them. You're starting Patrick Mahomes, especially after seeing that he actually, had downfield passing success last week. Finally. But Isaiah Pacheco, smash spot here. Bengals last season allowed 2.7 yards before contact per attempt, worst in the NFL. 12.7% of the runs against them gained 10 plus yards, 6th worst rate in the NFL. And then in week one, we just saw Ramondre Stevenson. He avoided 13 tackles against the Bengals, and he rushed for 120 yards and a score. Obviously, DJ Reader's not coming back. He's with Detroit now. This run defense is really bad. Was terrible all of last season. Wouldn't shock me if it's even worse this year. And yeah, Pacheco lost some third down work to Samaje Perine, but yeah, he's a top 10 running back. He's a great play here. So is Rashee Rice. This Rashee Rice is one of my favorite plays in the slate. Whether it's obviously you're starting him in redraft, obviously, but DFS, like, he's a smash play here. You love the week one usage, 7 catches, 103 yards, a 33% target share. He had a league high 5 targets off slants, and the Bengals last season, listen to what they allowed off slant routes in 2023. 16.8 yards per reception, most in the NFL. 9.6 yards after the catch per reception, most in the NFL. And a 45.9% open separation rate, worst in the NFL. I can't promise you that the Bengals are going to do what the Ravens did and settle with having linebackers cover Rashee Rice in the middle of the field. But where he set up in this offense is prime for so much success, especially in this matchup. So, yeah, he's going to be a top 15 wide receiver going forward and one of the best values in fantasy drafts this season. And then Xavier Worthy, like, regression's going to hit. He had, 2 touchdowns on 3 touches. But I don't know if it's going to hit in this spot, especially if Hollywood's not back. Cincinnati last season, 8.5 air yards per out run allowed, and 15.5% of the pass attempts against the Bengals went for 20-plus yards. It's the highest rate in the NFL. This team, just whether it's on the ground or through the air, suddenly, since last season, they're just giving up so many explosive passing plays. So start all of the Chiefs. Kelce, Pacheco, Worthy, Rice, and obviously Patrick Mahomes. I think they smash here. All right, we will take one more break and we'll close out the last couple games here on the podcast. 3 more games to break down, I believe, and then we will close it out. So finishing up week number 2 when we come back. All right, this game's pretty easy. Steelers at the Broncos. Start the Steelers defense, I'll tell you that much. I made sure, somehow they were available in one of my leagues, and I made damn sure to go get them. Because Bo Nix looked unbelievably bad last week. The Broncos just have no skill position players that you worry about that can get separation or do anything after the catch. So I'm keeping an eye on Julian McLaughlin. Like, he's going to have some good PPR weeks with the way this offense is constructed and the fact that they'll be trailing in a lot of games. But I'm not starting a Bronco here. Sutton's going to see Joey Porter Jr. Don't love that. The Steelers play slow when they run the ball, so it's going to limit a lot of possessions in this game. Denver's run defense isn't good, so they should be able to sustain drives when they're running the football. I have no interest in any Broncos in any format. For the Steelers, Justin Fields looks like he'll start again. He'll be in that QB2 range, high-end QB2 range. Last week, he had, I think, 11 carries, over 50 yards. He's now averaging 11.5 carries per game over the past two seasons in his starts. He smashed the Broncos last year, for what it's worth. Like, well over 300 passing yards. Not the same style of offense, obviously, but I like Fields here. We'll see what the usage looks like for Jalen Warren if he's more involved. But the usage, like, based off what we saw last week, you can't start him with any confidence. So Najee Harris, who had 20 carries, could have 20 carries again here, especially if the game script favors the Steelers. So I like Harris. George Pickens, tough matchup against Pat Surtain. And what was with the snaps? He played under 70% of snaps. That was just weird. Pickens, boom, bust, low-end wide receiver 2 based off the matchup. But he'll be ranked a lot higher in better matchups going forward. Sunday Night Football, Bears at Texans. Tough to fully break this game down right now because Rome Odunze and Keenan Allen both banged up. Keenan Allen continues to deal with his heel injury. Left for a little bit last week. And then Rome's obviously, he was initially listed as week to week. And then Matt Eberflus said he's day to day. So I'm not 100% ruling him out for this game. But if one or both of those guys sit, I think DJ, like say Rome sits and the other two receivers play. DJ Moore and Keenan Allen are both top 25 wide receivers for me probably. And if obviously it both sit and DJ Moore gets all of the volume to himself, like, yeah, like you're not benching DJ Moore, and Keenan Allen gets a massive bump, obviously, if Rome's out. I mean, Allen had 11 targets. He had a lot of deep targets too, just, you know, and he dropped a touchdown for what it's worth. So he didn't play his best. Caleb didn't play well, like might want to wait and see with him before going on the road for your first road game against a tough Texans defense. Like, I know Richardson just had a massive game against him fantasy-wise, but he was 9 for 19 passing. DeAndre Swift, he's like a flex play for me. Didn't look good. Offensive line for the Bears didn't look great either. Texans did a pretty good job against Jonathan Taylor last week, although he scored. Like, the efficiency was bad. There was, like, no explosive runs from Jonathan Taylor. So I'm kind of waiting to see with the Bears. I'm not starting the tight ends. Like, maybe they run more 12 personnel if Rome and or Keenan Allen are out. But Cole Kmet ran like 12 pass routes last week. Like, it's over for him. It didn't even start for him. If you listen to this podcast, you didn't draft Cole Kmet. So we'll see with the Bears. We'll keep an eye on the status of Rome and Keenan Allen. And the Texans are pretty easy. You start them all. You start the receivers each week. Collins, you view as the top guy each week. And then you see who has the better game between Steph and Tank Dell. Diggs, interestingly enough, almost 70% of the time last week he was in the slot. He had a 1.5 ADOT, which is interesting. But then you also have the fact that, like, a handful of his targets came from inside the 10-yard line. So obviously you're not getting, you know, downfield targets from that part of the field. But him in the slot is like cheat code. Like, I pointed out that his metrics and advanced analytics on vertical routes last year were bad, but he doesn't have to run those routes in the offense. So, yeah, like, tough matchup on paper for Collins against Jalen Johnson and Tank Dell. We'll see some Tyreek Stevenson, but Tyreek Stevenson's kind of like a boom bust defensive back in fantasy. Like, he'll give up a lot of explosive plays. And Tank Dell, yes, his snaps were below the other two, but he still ran a route on like 87% of the dropback. So, like, the times he wasn't on the field, the Texans were running the football anyway. So, you know, Collins is a top 12 wide receiver for me. And then Tank and Steph are both like top 25. You're probably starting them each week. You're not benching Joe Mixon after 33 touches. He won't be getting that this game. And the Bears run defense is elite. I know they allowed like a 20-yard touchdown to Tony Pollard last week, but they have still been unbelievable since the middle of last season. But Mixon, clearly getting all of the work. He probably gets 20 touches again in this one. And I think Dalton Schultz also on the injury report. We'll keep an eye on him. But if he plays, he's like a high-end tight end too at best. Final game of the week, Falcons at Eagles on Monday night. Start the Eagles. Hurts, Barkley, Brown, Smith, Goddard. You temper expectations for Goddard because he gets the fewest work and gets nothing in the end zone. But tight end's rough. He's in a great offense. And it's just hard to bench somebody like in that role. Barkley, obviously, like, could you have seen anything better from him? So much volume, usage in the passing game, goal line work. And also the Philly touch push wasn't as good as I thought it would be. So maybe after seeing Barkley do what he did, it's even more emphasis on Barkley at the goal line. And the Falcons, like, that's where you can target this defense the most is, you know, on their defensive line. Devonta Smith, though. Like, I know A.J. Brown had the more explosive game, over 100 yards and a touchdown. I could not have loved what I saw from Devonta Smith anymore. Played in the slot. Got all of the, like, Devonta Smith in week 1, according to Stats Hub, was, like, top 5 in targets with 3 to 5 yards of separation. Like, he had 7 for 87. Like, he's going to go from somebody that was, you know, his spike games were like 120 in a touchdown and his floor games were like 4 for 40 to still having those spike weeks, but also his floor is going to be higher because of the slot role. The Falcons give up a lot of production in the slot too. And you would think A.J. Brown sees more of A.J. Terrell. So, I couldn't be more excited about Devonta Smith. He's a must-start player. Along with, you know, this entire Eagles offense. And then the Falcons scare me, man. I talked about it in the recap show. Field Yates pointed out a stat from Next Gen Stats about the Falcons being in pistol or shotgun 96% of the time in week 1. That is not a scheme thing to me. That is a Kirk Cousins can't move thing. No play action. They didn't run any play action. Just makes your offense so much more one-dimensional. So, I think defensively, some of the Eagles players played well. I think Quinion Mitchell played well in week 1. Zach Bond played well. I still think this is going to be an average defense at best. Like, Bijan's obviously a must start. The usage from Bijan was unbelievable. 90% of the snaps. What do you have? 23 touches, I think. Like, Tyler Allgeier was nothing. And if Kirk Cousins can't move, you're going to continue to see a lot of these checkdowns. And the Eagles with Vic Fangio now playing a lot more cover 3 in this zone, it's going to allow a lot of receptions to the running backs, these checkdowns. And that's what the Falcons might have to do right now if Kirk Cousins can't move. So Bijan, obviously a must-start player. Kyle Pitts, it's tough to bench him because of tight end. And he played like 90%+ of the snaps too, which is just new for him, which is awesome. But I am definitely worried about Drake London a little bit. And it's not even because of Drake London. It's just like, we were hoping and expecting this massive quarterback upgrade, which I still think is there. But maybe we overlooked the fact that maybe Kirk Cousins wouldn't be quite himself in week 1. I think London can win in this matchup against these defensive backs, don't get me wrong. But a little bit worried about that. I think that has London as more of a low-end wide receiver 2 at best, as opposed to where he was drafted as like a high-end wide receiver 2. So we'll see if the Falcons change things. I would think they try to at least implement a little bit more play action so they're not as one-dimensional. But that scared me. That really scared me and concerned me seeing that you know, no under center, no play action from the Falcons in week 1. It was literally reminiscent of what the Bengals did the first couple weeks last year when Joe Burrow wasn't healthy with the calf. The exact same style of offense. And the Bengals offense in that stretch was awful. So I'm a little bit worried. I'm bumping down Drake London a little bit. I think Bijan could be the running back 1 this year, especially with McCaffrey's injury. And we will see. But I'm excited for this game because I want to see if it was just a 1 week thing or if this continues again in week 2, then you have to wonder if Kirk Cousins is really going to be able to elevate these guys as much as we anticipated this season. But that will do it for me. Just approaching the hour mark here on the podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and I appreciate you sticking with me the entire way through. Again, check out all the content at FTNFantasy.com. Just so much of it. So awesome. We have a ton of great podcasts as well as part of FTN Media. This podcast, The Rant with Jeff Ratcliffe, the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast, Main Streets with Chris Meany, the Dynasty Podcast with Jeremy Popolars, and then rankings being updated constantly on the site. Half PPR, full PPR, whatever you need, from myself, Jeff Ratcliffe, Scott Spratt, Mike Randall, Chris Meany, Tyler Lochner, Jeremy Popolars. So, Discord access. Like, everything you need to get ready for fantasy football each week is at your disposal at ftnfantasy.com. So, hopefully the Bills win on Thursday. I need it. I don't like the Bills playing on Thursday because I have to start my anxiety early in the week. But go Bills. Go fantasy football. Hopefully your teams get off to a good start here on Thursday. This has been the game two, or week two, game by game preview for the podcast. My name is Adam. Thanks for listening as always. We'll talk to you next time. Peace out.